gathered together from the far reaches of the internet are assembled a network of podcasts dedicated to the first and greatest superhero, Superman. The Superman Podcast Network is dedicated to covering all aspects of the Superman legend, featuring
the thrilling adventures of Superman,
Golden Age Superman,
the Superman Fan Podcast,
Superman in the Bronze Age,
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
I've got a few things to say about Superman.
The Superman Vidcast,
the world's best podcast,
and
Radio Kale from SupermanHomepage.com,
as well as the audio dramas Superman, Last Son of Krypton, and Supergirl, Last Daughter of Krypton from Pendant Audio Productions. Join hosts
Michael Bradley,
John Wilson,
Billy Hogan,
Charlie Niemeyer,
J. David Weider,
Jeffrey Taylor,
Michael Bailey,
Scott Gardner,
Cayman Stoll,
I'm Isaac,
I'm Adam,
Dave Eunice, and co-host Scotty V.
at SupermanPodcastNetwork.com.
This is the Superman Fan Podcast. I'm your host, Billy Hogan. Put on your indestructible cape and join me as together we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. This is episode number 211, Superman in 2011, the year in review for the week of Wednesday, December 28th, 2011. And I'm recording this in the early afternoon of Friday the 30th, New Year's Eve Eve. I hope everyone had a very Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and had a wonderful time with family and friends. And I also hope that everyone enjoyed what you got them, and I hope you enjoyed all of your gifts as well. As for myself, our whole family was together for the first time since, I think, 2008. Last Christmas, my son was up in Pennsylvania, and then he came back home and settled in Tallahassee with his girlfriend, Gabby, and they stayed a few days with us. They came down on Thursday before Christmas and left on the Monday after Christmas. And it was a very fun time to have everyone together. And Gabby really enjoyed her first Christmas with us. She said this is her most fun Christmas she ever had. Now, my daughter, Hannah, really got into the Christmas spirit. She was excited about being able to shop and buy gifts for all of her friends and family. And on Christmas morning, between my wife and I, Hannah, my daughter, and Will and Gabby, the tree was overflowing with gifts. And when we opened our gifts, you couldn't walk on the living room floor without stepping on either wrapping paper or someone's gift. Even though, you know, before we even started opening gifts, I got a trash bag just so we could kind of keep the mess to a minimum. That didn't get really cleared up till everyone kind of sorted their gifts and took them to their rooms or packed them away. In my son and his girlfriend's case. And as for my wife, I got her a curling iron, which had an inch or very wide barrel, which is what she wanted. But that wasn't going to be the only thing I was going to get her. So I got her the DVD of a movie that she had seen with some of her friends and really enjoyed very much, and that was the movie The Help. And I've heard nothing but good things about it. I haven't seen it myself, although I have seen the preview at the theater for it and in the commercials, and it does seem to be the have the potential to be an excellent movie. And comic book gifts I bought, I got my daughter Sandman Volume 6. I got her Volume 5 for her birthday, which was on the 17th. And for my son, I got Strangers in Paradise Volume 2, which I'd gotten Volume 1 for his girlfriend Gabby, and Will had read it and enjoyed it, so got him Volume 2. And for his girlfriend Gabby, I got the book An Elegy for Amelia Johnson, which was a graphic novel. Look it up on Amazon and check out the description. I've read it before. I wrapped it for her gift, and it was an excellent graphic novel, and I would recommend it. As for the gifts that I got, my daughter got me a couple of art supply gifts. She got me an extra large black magic marker, which will come in handy when inking black backgrounds. She also got me a brush pen and a bottle of black ink, which I was the bottle I have right now is a little bit low, so that will come in handy. I got two books. My wife, she had to order it from Amazon. It's a DC Guide to Digital Drawing by Freddie Williams II, which I'm in the middle of reading, and I'm looking forward to kind of going back and learning how to draw digitally. I don't have a Cintiq or even a Wacom tablet, but I'm glad that now I have all of DC Guides to Drawing Comics. They did one on writing, penciling, inking, lettering and coloring, both in one volume, and now digital drawing. So finally I've got the whole set of how-to books from DC. My daughter got me the young adult novel A Beautiful Friendship by David Weber, who this is part of the Honor Harrington series, but this is the first novel in a series specifically geared to young adults, but I'm such a fan of the Honor Harrington series that I wanted to read it. The first part is the shorter novella or short story, whatever you want to call it, that was in one of the Worlds of Honor books about Honor Harrington's ancestor. And then this new book also expands on events that take place in Honor's ancestor after the events of the short story, A Beautiful Friendship. My wife also got me, wife or daughter, I don't remember which, the DVD of Batman Year One, which I'm behind getting the DC animated movie, straight-to-DVD movies. I'm looking forward to Legion of Doom coming up this year. There's a couple I still don't have. Justice League, Crisis on Two Earths, Superman, Batman, Apocalypse, and I think there may be one more. But I've watched it, and I really enjoyed it. It was an excellent adaptation of the Batman Year One miniseries written by Frank Miller and drawn by David Mazzucchelli. And I would put that up there with my favorite so far, Justice League, New Frontier, All-Star Superman, and now Batman Year One. It was my favorite DC animated DVDs. Now, on Christmas Eve, at my family Christmas dinner and gift exchange, I got an iTunes gift card, which I was had when I saw it was the card itself was just wrapped, and so I thought that was what it was probably going to be, a gift card of some kind. And some years back, I had my name got picked last, and I was kind of glad it was, because it was a gift card from MasterCard or Visa, and I'd used it to pick up the Tick live-action series, all 9 episodes, which appeared briefly on Fox in the previous decade, and for some reason, I either took it to work and left it and someone picked it up, or else it's hidden here underneath something at home, or someone borrowed it from the house, and I don't know who it was, and it was never returned. But anyway, with the iTunes gift card, we also had a standing balance on our iTunes account, so I put it to good use. I bought the Tick Live Action series off of iTunes, and so that took up pretty much the gift card itself, and we had like $15, and we had about $16 on the iTunes account. So I was trying to think, well, what do I want to get? I looked at some of the seasons of the various Superman cartoons, and they were like $30 or so. And so I'd already spent half of the 31 and change that I had, so that was out of the question. And I remembered one of the DVDs that I'd been wanting was Secret Origins, the story of DC Comics. And so I bought that as well, and that left me about $3 and change. And so I decided to buy a couple of songs from my favorite era of music, the 1960s rock and roll. And so I bought three oldies from the 60s. Some of you older listeners might recognize or remember these. First of all, it's Journey to the Center of the Mind by the Amboy Dukes, with a young Ted Nugent on lead guitar. And then I downloaded two songs by the Yardbirds, The Shape of Things and Heart Full of Soul. Now, one thing that was on top of my wish list that I did not get was a Kindle Fire, but that'll just have to be on the list for this next year. Of course, my wife can always get it for my birthday or our anniversary, and that would be fine with me. But, you know, eventually I'll get some kind of digital reader. But this was a very fun Christmas, and one of the most enjoyable in a long time. I mean, they've all been good. But this one was really nice because we were, you know, all together for the first time in a couple of years, and really enjoyed the company of, you know, son and his girlfriend, and it was just a fun season overall. Well, after ended this segment a little too soon. Before I get into looking at the various Superman titles over this past year, I do have an email to read from my fellow podcaster, Michael Bradley. And he wrote, "I heard today your review of the second story from Superman number 136, where the scientists deduced the distance between Krypton and Earth. I'm not sure if you're still interested in the comparison, but here's how that measures out. The distance from Earth to the Sun is considered one astronomical unit, and which I was familiar with. There are roughly 63,239.8 AUs in one light year. So, according to his findings, Krypton would be roughly 20,407.166 AUs from Earth, or more than 20,000 times the distance between Earth and the Sun. Definitely well outside our solar system. Michael Bradley." Well, Michael, thank you for that email, and I was glad that you sent that information to me. Obviously, math was not my best subject, and I was glad you were able to figure it out. I tried to do that and do some research briefly on the internet, but I didn't have the time to devote to it, so thank you very much. And I didn't realize that Michael Bradley doubled as Mr. Spock. So thanks again, Michael. Now, after a promo for a Superman podcast, we'll begin our look at Superman in 2011.
You are cordially invited to attend a podcast that observes the unfolding events of history. Come with me and observe the birth and growth of a legend. the pages of a 10-cent pulp comic book to the newspapers, radio program adventures, theatrical films, and more. Witness the dawn of the superhero. Golden Age Superman. Available on iTunes and at goldenagesuperman.libsyn.com. Every legend has a beginning.
Boys and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
The Thrilling Adventures of Superman, a journey through the golden age of the Man of Steel in comics, radio, and film. Available at greatkrypton.com.
Lanterns, I've called you here to this unprecedented gathering because we face an unprecedented danger. An enemy we don't yet fully understand. Moment that we were created, but I don't need to tell you your duty. I don't need to tell you who we are.
Chosen by the Mystic Guardians of the Universe.
Recruited from across the galaxy for their bravery and courage.
The best and brightest join to fulfill a solemn oath.
In brightest day.
In blackest night.
No evil shall escape my sight.
Let those who worship evil's might
beware my power.
Green Lantern's Light.
Green Lantern's Light, a monthly podcast covering the adventures of Hal Jordan, John Stewart, Guy Gardner, and the entire Green Lantern Corps from 1984 through today.
Say the oath. Join the Corps.
Green Lantern's Light. Available monthly at greenlanternslight.com.
Now, I will look at the various titles according to the storyline, so that will mean that when I get to Action Comics in 2011, I will break that up into two segments. And overall, my first impression of, you know, Superman comics in 2011 would be to quote Charles Dickens, the beginning line from his book A Tale of Two Cities. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Or in Superman's case, it was the worst of times and the best of times. And in the title Superman, the storyline Grounded finally finished up, and none too soon as far as I'm concerned. It began with Superman issue number 707, the March 2011 cover date, which was the first Superman title, between Superman and Action, that is. It was published on January 12th. And that was Grounded Part 5. And in that issue, Superman faced the dilemma of reporting a chemical plant's environmental violations after he was able to stop a fire at this plant, versus the job loss shutting down the plant might cause. And the Man of Steel also began a conflict with Lois when he ordered her not to run the story on the chemical plant's violations, which would last for the rest of the storyline before it was finally resolved. The next issue, 708, cover dated April 2011, was published on February 9th, and this was my favorite issue of the entire run, which didn't take much, but this one really stood out in a good way to me. Superman was introduced to the Fortress of Solidarity, where Superman and women of every era of time were able to gather, and it was located outside of the time stream. It reminded me of the Superman squad from All-Star Superman and the Superman of 2965 stories from the back of Superman in the early 1960s, which we will eventually get to. And it was the first time that his fellow Superman, Superwomen, were mainly Superwoman, told him that the reasons behind his moral and his emotional dilemma in his walk across America was that he was in danger of losing himself. And this issue had a cover with Wonder Woman, the J. Michael Straczynski version of Wonder Woman. She appeared in a brief scene at the end, which didn't... usually when I see a guest on the cover, you assume they play a big part in the story, which this was not the case. But that did not take away my enjoyment of this issue. I failed to mention that Chris Roberson took over writing the Superman Grounded storyline with this title. J. Michael Straczynski had left after the Superman number 706 when he left Monthly Comics to concentrate on graphic novels like the sequel to Superman Earth 1. Back to the Superman stories in 709, published on March 16th, which carried the May 2011 cover date. He was met, Superman that is, was met by Flash, who gave him a word of encouragement, and we were introduced into Clark Kent's hero from his youth, Iron Monroe. And in 710, cover dated June 11th, 2011, published on April 13th, we have a flashback story when which teamed up Clark Kent and Bruce Wayne before they became superheroes. And I believe this is the one where the Dick Grayson Batman had a talk with Superman and gave him his theory that the Man of Steel was suffering from the emotional toll from the destruction of New Krypton, and that was why the Widow's comments about Superman not being on Earth and blaming the Man of Steel for her husband's cancer from death put him over the edge and sent him on his walk across America. 712 got a lot of news. This was the August 2011 cover dated issue, published on June 8th, where the original story was scheduled to be Superman in Los Angeles when he would run into a Muslim superhero, Sharif, was replaced with a Krypton story, which itself was pulled after Superboy's death in Infinite Crisis. After reading this Krypto story, I don't understand DC's logic behind pulling both stories, because first of all, I don't think that DC would publish a story that would denigrate any ethnic or religious group, especially in a Superman title. I think I read, and maybe I even heard Dan DiDio mention this in MegaCon in 2010, that he pulled the crypto story, which because he didn't like crypto. And I just don't understand their thinking. It seemed like DC was doing a little bit too much second-guessing themselves after the debacle of the short Superman story in the back of Action 900 when Superman renounced his U.S. citizenship and caused a lot of controversy. And we will discuss that particular story in detail after we get to Action Comics. 713... the September 2011 cover date, published on July 13th. It was after having a private talk with Superboy and Supergirl, Clark renounced his Superman identity until at the very end, the stalker lady who had come in contact with the mysterious crystal when Clark found out that he had kidnapped and threatened to kill Lois. And it set up the finale, which was published in Superman number 714, the October 2011 cover date, published on August 3rd, titled Grounded No More, where Superman found a way to resolve the conflict with the female stalker with a minimum of fisticuffs and a minimum of property damage. Less than what you would usually see in a superhero villain fight. It brought back the Fortress of Singularity, and it was a surprisingly satisfying ending to what had begun as a dreadful storyline that J. Michael Straczynski began. Chris Robison took over the Superman Grounded storyline, as I said, with Superman number 707. He made a depressing story bearable by giving Superman a glimmer of hope in resolving, you know, his internal dilemma, whereas there really was none at all in JMS's issues. This was my first exposure to Chris Roberson as a comic book writer. And then later on this past year, I read his second Fables miniseries involving the Fable character Cinderella, who was the spy in the Fables universe. In the second Cinderella miniseries, Cinderella Fables Are Forever. And after reading both the Cinderella miniseries and Roberson's work on the Superman Grounded storyline, really made me want to read more of his work, and I'm doing that with the Star Trek Legion crossover being published by IDW. And while I have liked JMS's comic book writing in the past, especially on Spider-Man, even the somewhat controversial mystical spider story with Ezekiel, I think the character's name was. There was a Book of Lost Souls was the name of the miniseries. I think it wasn't finished. Another one of JMS's unfinished comic book series, which he worked on with the artist Colleen Doran. I like to read more of some of his past work that I've missed, but after Superman Grounded does not do anything to make me really want to read any more of his future comic book work. And he also was involved in a little bit of controversy in the last couple of months when he made a comment about the declining sales on The Amazing Spider-Man from comparing it to when he was on there, which some professionals and fans took exception to they felt that he was inferring that he is a better comic book writer than those currently working on the Spider-Man title, and because the numbers are down from when he worked on it, and which a few, including Mark Waid, took exception to. So it really doesn't do anything to make me really want to read more of Jim Michael Straczynski's comic book work. My biggest problem, as I said in last year's year-in-review episode, my main problem with the Grounded storyline was that I didn't buy the idea that a woman claiming that the fact that Superman was on New Krypton when her husband died of cancer and he wasn't around to cure her husband of his tumor, that Superman was to blame for her husband's death. I mean, after all, at the end of the Brainiac storyline, Superman was unable to save Pa Kent. And if he couldn't save Pa Kent, then he's not going to be able to save everybody. I mean, after all, he's not a physician. And I thought that there was something else would have to have played in his decision to walk across the country. But then there was no questions raised about nothing was mentioned about the aftermath of New Krypton or the toll that it had taken on Superman, which obviously it would have had to when he lost his home planet for the second time. And it just was turning out to be a very depressing story, and I really don't like to see Superman second-guess himself. And I had to question DC's reasoning and going with this title. I'll get more into that after we finish looking at the Action Comics storyline involving Lex Luthor, which will be coming up. Although the best thing other than Chris Roberson's writing that I enjoyed about this year in this Superman Grounded storyline was John Cassaday's covers. I was introduced to John Cassaday's art in the comic book series Planetary, published by Wildstorm, which is a defunct imprint of DC Comics. And I love John Cassaday's art wherever I see it, and his covers for Superman during the Grounded storyline were one of the few high points, certainly before Chris Roberson took over the writing of this title. And another thing, it seemed like in listening to Chris Roberson talk about working on this storyline, it seemed to conflict with what DC was saying when he was introduced as JMS's replacement. DC was saying that Roberson was given a detailed outline, which Chris said that it was just a one-page brief outline, and most of the things that he put in the story came from his himself and not from any detailed outline that DC was supposed to have given him. So maybe it was just some spin control from DC Comics. Well, after another promo for a Superman podcast, we will take a look at the Action Comics issues, which finished up the Luthor storyline, which took over Action Comics.
In the city of Metropolis, Clark Kent appears to be a mild-mannered reporter for the Daily Planet. Unknown to the world, he's also Superman, fighting a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. But before there was Metropolis, there was Smallville. Before there was Lois Lane, there was Lana Lane. Before he was Superman, he had adventures as Superboy. Dave's Amazing World of Superman presents The Smallville Chronicles, a Superboy podcast, a weekly look at the adventures of Superman when he was a boy, featuring an issue-by-issue look at the pages of Superboy from his appearances in Adventure Comics and his own title. Find it weekly at AmazingWorldOfSuperman.com.
Presenting Supergirl's Cosmic Adventures, a podcast dedicated to the continuing adventures of the Maid of Might herself, Supergirl. Episodes can be found at supergirlpodcast.blogspot.com.
Over in Action Comics, this year it finished up the Lex Luthor storyline, which took over Action and left the Man of Steel only in the Superman title. And in Action, Luthor was involved in a quest for the Black Power Rings, and it began in Action Comics number 897 for this year at least, in Black Ring Part 8 in the March 2011 cover dated issue, which was published on January 26th. And this was a very interesting issue where Luthor interviewed the Joker in his Lex's quest for the Black Power Ring. And it was a very bizarre issue with the Luthor, Superman's arch enemy, interviewing the Joker, Batman's arch enemy. And any time the Joker's involved, it's going to be a bizarre story. Issue number 898, the April 2011 cover date, published on February 23rd, Luthor faced Larfleeze. And 899, the May 2011 issue, published on March 30th, Luthor discovered the true plot behind the true manipulator behind his quest for the Black Power Ring. He was manipulated by Brainiac through the Lois Lane robot, which was kind of creepy, especially when there was one issue where Lex Luthor was in bed with the Lois Lane robot. But Luthor, being the brilliant mind that he is, got wise to Brainiac's plot, much to Brainiac's surprise, and we've found out that Mr. Mind, the classic Captain Marvel villain, which was with a intelligent caterpillar, was also involved. And issue number 900, the June 11th cover date, published on April 27th, and I bought the Alex Ross variant cover, which kind of reprised the cover to the original Action Comics number 1 cover from a different view. Not only did it end the Black Ring story, but it also began the next storyline, Doomsday, Reign of the Doomsday. Superman's eventual showdown with the ultra-powered Luthor, and as usual, Luthor's vanity contributed to his downfall. And then in the back of the issue was filled by several short stories. For the first one titled Life Support, where Jor-El asked another Kryptonian scientist to help him in Kal-El's quest to save his son from Krypton's destruction. And it showed the man's reaction when he learned the truth of Krypton's future. The next one was Autobiography, which was written by Paul Dini with art by R.B. Silva, was an unusual story of Superman's conversation with another superpowered being who was a protector of an alien world. This took place, I believe, in the Fortress of Solitude, where this other superpowered alien talked about an impossible choice he, she, or it was faced when and he was protecting the alien world that he had made his home. The next one is a very lighthearted but very good story nonetheless. Friday Night in the 21st Century, written by Jeff Johns with art by Gary Frank, whose art I do enjoy. When Lois gave Clark a rare evening off with some of his friends from the 31st century. And it ended with a double-page spread of Clark and Lois hosting some of the Legion of Superheroes to a pizza party. And in the probably most infamous story from this issue, and what helped bring the biggest publicity before DC's announcement of their new 52, The Incident, written by David S. Goyer with art by Miguel Sapolvior, pardon me for mispronouncing the name. It was the infamous story of Superman renouncing his U.S. citizenship to be a more of a world player, so to speak, because he wanted to be known as someone who would help anyone around the world and not just be a considered an American tool. It brought a lot of publicity, which mostly bad publicity. And when DC saw the firestorm it was caused, they kind of backpedaled. And it was about Superman's involvement in some of the Arab Spring protests. And my own reaction was I wasn't as upset as some people were, because during the 1970s, about 74, I bought one of the oversized Treasury editions or limited collector's editions. They were like the size of what today would be, you know, the original comic book art size, you know, 11 by 17 page would fit on these on the page of the reprint edition. There was a origin story laid out by Carmine Infantino, finished by Kurt Swan and inked by Murphy Anderson, I think written by E. Nelson Bridwell, where at the end, Superman was in a special ceremony at the United Nations. Superman was made an honorary citizen of all of the member nations of the UN. And so with that in the back of my mind, I always considered Superman a hero of the world, not just a tool or a representative or ambassador even of the United States. Because, you know, if he's going to come to the aid of any emergency around the world, not just the United States. And so I thought it was a bit heavy-handed and really unnecessary for Superman to take that route, but it seemed like DC was wanting to stir up some publicity for Superman, and brother, did they get it. Now, while the continuity of that 70s origin story isn't no longer current, you know, it always has influenced my thinking about the Superman and his place in the world. And it really didn't help DC when Osama bin Laden was killed by a Navy SEAL squad maybe just over a week later, when it really caused a brief rise in patriotism that the mastermind behind the 9/11 attacks was brought to justice. After that story, it was a story told in storyboard form that's used by movies to kind of lay out a film, written by Richard Donner and Derek Hoffman, and storyboards by Matt Camp. And it was about Clark not liking the attention Cliff Carter paid Lois, and Mr. Carter was showing off his super suit, the EX-9000, which, of course, would backfire on him. If the storyline over in Superman would have been more satisfying, I think I may have liked this Luthor story in action better. It felt like it was a series of Luthor teaming up with various DCU villains. And I did like the ending of the Grounded storyline better than the Black Power Ring story, where Luthor became almost a cosmic being, but Superman was still able to save the day. Overall, the storyline was okay. It wasn't great, especially since the only Superman story was mostly a dud, Chris Roberson's contribution notwithstanding. Next, I'll take a look at the one-shot special issues and miniseries that I read of Superman in the old continuity before the New 52 began, and share my thoughts about those.
Rocketed as a baby from the exploding planet Krypton, Kal-El grew to manhood on Earth, whose yellow sun and lighter gravity gave him fantastic superpowers. In the city of Metropolis, he poses as TV newsman Clark Kent, but battles evil all over Earth and beyond as Superman.
Superman.
Superman in the Bronze Age is a weekly podcast following the adventures of Superman from 1970 to the Byrne reboot in 1986. Follow along at supermaninthebronzeage.blogspot.com.
The first special issue was the Superman 80-page giant, which had the April 2011 cover date and was published on February 2nd. It contained about 7 stories altogether. The first was titled First Time for Everything, which continued the Jor-El story from the Action Comics Annual number 13, I believe it was, where it showed how Jor-El confirmed his theory about the final fate of the planet Krypton. The second story was titled Old Men Talking in Bars, where Perry White shared a few drinks with the Golden Age hero Wildcat, and we learned about Perry's first meeting with Wildcat, as well as his very first byline, which got him a job at the Daily Planet. Next was Quarter-Life Crisis of Infinite Jimmy Olsen's, which was an offbeat story about a metropolis overrun by Jimmy Olsen clones, when he had been captured by, I guess, a mad scientist, and had made many clones of him. Next was No Go Away Glad, Just Go Away, which was an odd, bizarro story. After that was a story titled Supergirl in the a story titled The Bloodsucker's Moxie, where she learned the downside of how being a superhero can affect her secret identity. Then Lois and Lana had a rare team-up in Credit Check, where they find a credit card that someone had lost, and they find the owner and learn an interesting story, which does not wind up in the Daily Planet. And after that was Bad Moon Rising, where Connor Kent, feeling a little frustrated in Smallville, needed to blow off steam, when he runs into a teen Wolfman who needed to do the same thing. This was a fun Superman anthology. I really liked the bittersweet Jor-El story, where he was overcame many obstacles to prove his theory, but learned the tragic truth about his planet's future. Old Men Talking in Bars, that was a really nice look into Perry White's past. And the Quarter-Life Crisis of Infinite Jimmy Olsen's kind of reminded me of the few Jack Kirby Jimmy Olsen stories that I've been able to read, and some of the Jimmy Olsen and Cadmus adventures from the early 90s. And I guess my favorite after that was the Lois and Lana story, where it showed Lois and Lana both showing their detective skills and getting to the bottom of the story. The weakest was Bizarro. I like the character. Certainly the Silver Age stories have a certain charm to them, but this one just didn't grab me. After that came the Jimmy Olsen number one one-shot, which carried the May 2011 cover date and was published around March 30th. This one collected the first half of this issue, collected the second features which the DC titles were carrying when they were at $3.99, and then they ended their second features when they went back to $2.99 at the beginning of the year, and then this one shot picked up the story and published the remainder of the Jimmy Olsen storyline, which introduced Chloe Sullivan from the Smallville series and introduced her to Superman comics. She was an old love interest of Jimmy's, as well as a fellow reporter. In this story, Jimmy saved Earth from some partying world-destroying aliens by boring them to death until they left, and he also foiled Chloe's current boyfriend, Sebastian Mallory, from using a Superman video game from taking over the world, which the story made it sound a lot more plausible and less goofy than what this brief description would make it seem. I liked how it showed the adventurous Jimmy, which reminded me of the Kirby Olsen stories and in the 90s with the Newsboy Legion clones. And it was a nice change from the naive Silver Age Jimmy Olsen. And who can't like an Amanda Connor cover? And on when I go to MegaCon in February, I'm going to have to make sure I take it so that she can autograph it. Next came Superman Beyond, which carried the October 2011 cover date and was published on August 24th. Superman Beyond was a character from Batman Beyond who appeared in a couple of episodes. The older Man of Steel returned to Earth, and he wound up capturing an escaped supervillain who had went off the deep end. He learned that his ex-wife was cutting him off from seeing his daughter so that she would not grow up knowing what kind of a father she had. It was a touching story, although the art wasn't the greatest. I'm not that big of a fan of Ron Frenz's pencils and Sal Buscema's inking, but I did enjoy the story. And this year, the big event series was Flashpoint, where the whole DC Universe was changed. I won't go into details, but I didn't read it because, one thing, I didn't have the money. The only one I read was the Flashpoint Project Superman, which carried the August through October 2011 cover dates. Number one was published on June 29th. Number two, July 27th. And three was published on October 24th. Came out the same week as Superman Beyond. In number one, we were introduced to what we learn is Subject Zero, which was a volunteer of the U.S. military who volunteered to become a subject in an experiment which was attempting to create a superhero, a Superman, which would be an agent of the U.S. military. And at the end, Metropolis was struck by meteors, and one of them included a rocket which carried the infant Kal-El from Krypton. And in number two, Kal-El was about a 10-12-year-old boy known as Subject One, and he eventually came into conflict with Subject Zero, saving a young Lois Lane from Subject Zero. And General Lane took Subject Zero out of the equation by beaming both of them to the Phantom Zone. And in the final issue of this three-issue miniseries, both General Lane and Subject Zero were able to find a way to return from the Phantom Zone. And after Subject Zero murdered General Lane, Kal-El defeated and killed Subject Zero, but Lois Lane lost her life in the conflict. I did enjoy this miniseries. It was a very creepy, dark story. And it made me wish that I would have had the money to buy the rest of the Flashpoint event series, because in listening to several podcasts discuss Flashpoint, it reminded me of the classic Silver Age imaginary stories, which I loved when I was growing up, because they would do things with their characters that they would never dream of doing in the regular continuity, and you didn't know which way the story was going to go, and it made a lot more exciting reading. And maybe in the future I'll pick these up in back issues or some of the collected editions. And in looking back, I think Flashpoint would have been the one event series that I really would have enjoyed more than any other in quite a long time. And that finishes up my look at the special issues in 2011. I guess my favorite was Project Superman and the couple of stories from the Superman 80-page giant, Old Men Talking with Perry White, First Time for Everything with Jor-El, and Lois Lane and Lana in Credit Check. So these were some fun issues. After a promo for another Superman podcast, we'll take a look at Action Comics, the Reign of Doomsday storyline.
In 1992, the greatest hero the world has ever known died defending his city from a force of nature. That force of nature had a name. Doomsday.
From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast is a weekly internet radio program presented by the Superman homepage in association with the Superman Podcast Network. Every week, hosts Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor examine the comic book adventures of Superman from Man of Steel number 1 in 1986 to Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. Now they begin their coverage of the epic Death and Return of Superman trilogy with the first chapter of that story,
Doomsday.
From the first round to the ultimate sacrifice, Mike and Jeff will go through Doomsday in detail with the occasional special guest and a few surprises as well. Doomsday comes to From Crisis to Crisis beginning December 2011 at both www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com and www.supermanhomepage.com.
Hey everybody, my name is Michael Bailey, and this is the trailer with a truly epic ending to my new show about Batman, appropriately titled Bailey's Batman Podcast. Bailey's Batman Podcast is a weekly program that looks at a month in the life of the Dark Knight Detective, starting with the books bearing a March 1983 cover date, which is where my solid run of the character's comics begins, and moving forward until, well, at least until the books that came out in 2005, because that's where the solid run ends. Each week, I will give you a full synopsis and review of every major ongoing Batman title, with brief stops along the way to look at the important specials, miniseries, one-shots, and Elseworld stories, just to keep things interesting. I'll also be telling you what other books Batman appeared in that month, as well as what was going on elsewhere in the DCU. It is going to be all Batman, all the time, as I look at over 20 years of the character's history. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the epic ending to this trailer. You ready? The first appearance of Jason Todd. Death in the Family. Nightfall. Epic. No Man's Land. Do you have chills yet? All of that and more will be covered on Bailey's Batman Podcast every Tuesday at baileysbatmanpodcast.com.
The storyline that ended the regular continuity in Action Comics was the Reign of Doomsday story, which picked up after Action Comics 900 and issue number 901, the January 2011 issue, which was published on May 25th, after the series of one-shots where Doomsday seemed to attack one of the supporting cast of the Superman family of heroes. We learn of a threat to Earth, and the Eradicator is destroyed. In issue number 2, the August 2011 issue, released on June 23rd, the super Superman family of heroes save Earth from the immediate threat, but the fight isn't over in Action Comics 903, the September 2011 issue released on July 27th. The Eradicator has possessed Doomsday while the hero stops the other Doomsdays from attacking. Superman tackled the Doomslayer himself. And in Action Comics 904, the October 2011 issue released on August 24th, the Superman family of heroes finally defeat the Doomslayer, and the Eradicator-controlled Doomsday saved Superman before the Doomslayer ship made its dimensional jump, saving Earth from the debt of the Doomslayer. And at the end, one thing I can say about this storyline is that it ended in what I have to say is my favorite way, with Clark and Lois on a rare date. I mean, after all, we haven't seen much Clark in a couple of years. It's like DC forgot, Superman has a secret identity, and or else they didn't know what to do with Clark. Anyway, it was great to see a touching moment of Lois and Clark having a nice, relaxing, intimate evening together on a date in a nice restaurant, and then go home and celebrate. And that's one of the things I missed for not just this past year, but for several years. Clark Kent. I mean, after all, he's part of what made Superman an interesting character. I did think that while the Doomsday story was better than the Luthor story in Action or most of the Superman Grounded story, it's okay, but it wasn't the greatest story. I think maybe I like the ending with Lois and Clark in this issue almost equally as much as the ending of the Superman Grounded, when we see the Superman's Fortress of Singularity. And this ended Superman's current continuity before the New 52 universe began. And I have to say, Superman went out with a whimper, not a bang. I had to wonder what DC was thinking. It seemed like the editorial staff had lost their enthusiasm for Superman, or they didn't know what to do with Superman in the current continuity. And it really wasn't a great finish for the Man of Steel compared to some of the other heroes, Batman, The Flash, Green Lantern, who really have seemed more popular. Certainly, they have more titles than Superman. So it seems like Superman's really not their favorites anymore. Granted, I can understand partly why. It's a darker, more jaded world out there, and Superman, seems old-fashioned. But I think part of that is the fault of the DC. I think Superman is a breath of fresh air in the world, not just in the real world, but in the comic book world, when we have so many dark, dreary superheroes, and especially in the 90s, when you almost couldn't tell the heroes from the villains. And so I was hoping that with the New 52 that DC could find a way to revitalize the Man of Steel and maybe find something new and refreshing to do with the character that would kind of raise their own enthusiasm for the character, so that Superman would once again take his place as one of DC's best superheroes, as well as best-selling. And after another promo for a Superman podcast, we will take a look at Superman in the New 52 universe, which began, along with all the other DC titles, with number one issues of both Action Comics and Superman.
In the depths of space rests a planet. planet as of yet unknown to humankind. A planet of peace and prosperity. A planet that gave us its last family. And yet no one has devoted a podcast to that family until now.
Welcome to the Superman Family Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Pinkham, and every other week I will cover two Superman family-related comics, one from the past, pre-2006, and one from the present, post-2006, along with all your favorite Superman news and much, much more. Join me for some family fun, won't you?
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
Not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What an unusual view.
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, breathing, breath, heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit, and opinions...
He likes it! Hey, Mikey!
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson,
J. David Weider,
and
Michael Kaiser
take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right, or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky... Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
The New Superman began with a new Action Comics number 1, which carried the November 2011 cover date, and was published on September 7th. It was written, along with all of the remaining issues for this year, by Grant Morrison, and with art by Rags Morales. It introduced a new Clark Kent and Superman, which in this on the new cover... He appeared in a Superman t-shirt with a crude cape and in blue jeans and work boots. And for lack of a better term, and I'm not mocking it, I'm calling it the Jethro Superman from the character in Beverly Hillbillies, the classic CBS comedy from the 1960s. Grant Morrison returned the Man of Steel to his Golden Age roots as a crusader for the oppressed. He works for the Daily Star, even though he is friends with Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen, who work for the Daily Planet. Clark is a loner. There was a lot of publicity about DC doing away with the marriage. I was sad to see it end, but I understood why DC wanted to do it when they're beginning the character over. Why not start with Clark / Superman and Lois single? You know, I think that's the right way to do it. I would hope that in the future, somewhere down the road, they do have Clark and Lois marry, because I don't agree with the philosophy of some comic book editors or fans that, married superhero, can't tell exciting stories. Well, you know, we all come from families of some way, shape, or form, so, you know, we all relate to families in different ways, but, you know, we all have families, so why not see it in superhero comic books? To ignore that is kind of the play into the comic book, the cliche of the comic book reader that we all hate, of the socially inept, male-dominated fandom who have no skills with the opposite sex. So I hope somewhere down the line we do see Clark and Lois, some romantic relationship, and I'll get more into the relationship that is kind of presented in these new issues in Action and Superman a little bit later. Once again, Clark was a loner. He has big Harry Potter-style glasses. He dresses kind of like a slob with baggy clothes, which would be kind of smart to hide his physique. It kind of fits the same kind of general look that Grant Morrison and All-Star Superman artist Frank Quitely portrayed Clark Kent. I think it would make a better disguise than showing Clark in a suit and tie like the Golden Silver Bronze Age. And we are also introduced to others in the supporting cast, General Lane, and of course Lex Luthor, who appears to be once again a contemporary of Clark Kent and Superman, not Perry White, as was the case in John Byrne's Man of Steel miniseries back in 1986. In issue 2, which carried the December 2011 cover date, published on October 5th, Superman got captured after he was able to stop the train but was knocked out at the end of the first issue. We are introduced to John Henry Irons. Superman was able to finally make his escape, and John Corbin volunteered to become Metallo as an alien menace approached Earth and appeared to be possibly Brainiac. In issue number 3, the January 2012 cover date, published on November 2nd, we see a flashback of Brainiac attacking Krypton and kidnapping the city of Kandor and shrinking it to add to his collection. Clark Kent decided to give up Superman after the intense anti-Superman rallies, but then Brainiac hacked the John Corbin Metallo, and in issue number 4, the February 12th cover date, published on December 7th, Superman was shown in his first battle against Metallo, and the Man of Steel was joined by Steel, who is, of course, John Henry Irons, and it ended with Metropolis being captured and shrunk by Brainiac. And they had a backup story which finished up how Steel was able to defeat Metallo. And that's how the current Superman story will end for this year, in, at least in Action Comics. I thought this was a great start for Clark Kent and Superman. I felt DC updated the character for a more current society while staying true to the Man of Steel's history and his roots. I loved Riggs Morales' art, although sometimes Clark seemed a little too small for his build for someone to be Superman. And I guess part of it, or too young, I guess it's the big Harry Potter style glasses. Sometimes a few faces here and there are look a little weird or off. But overall, I am enjoying Riggs Morales' art and his covers. Grant Morrison is telling a comprehensible Superman story along the lines of All-Star Superman, not the mind trip of Superman Beyond, which was a Final Crisis tie-in. It does make sense to show Superman as a character who does kind of frighten the world. When he's first introduced, you know, for a kind of calloused society, you know, for someone to be that powered, you know, it would seem be natural for, you know, that society to kind of fear Superman until he's proven himself. It's not as, you know, simple times as in the late 30s, early 40s when Superman was introduced. I thought Grant brought some of the Golden Age sensibilities of Superman as a crusader, social crusader, champion of the oppressed, giving a modern spin. Now, I do hope that Superman being feared by people won't just be a regular part of the continuity from here on out. I would hope eventually the majority of people in Metropolis and the world would come to trust Superman, you know, maybe however long it takes. I just hope they don't drag this on forever. Because, you know, they kind of dealt with that, you know, in the last couple of years, and, you know, I kind of got tired of it. But since Superman, in this continuity, in this universe, he's a new hero, you know, I can see that a segment of the population would be a little bit afraid of someone this powerful suddenly living in their midst. And now I'll go ahead and just jump into Superman number 1. It also carried the November 2011 cover date and was published on September 28th. It began out with the old, in with the new, with the destruction of the old Daily Planet building, which really symbolized, you know, the out with the old Superman continuity, in with the new version of the Man of Steel. It was the official opening of the new Daily Planet skyscraper. Now Clark is a reporter for the Daily Planet, not the Daily Star. He has his new continuity Superman costume without the red shorts. And I'm kind of surprised that I do like it. The old-fashioned guy in me, you know, from the Silver Age, still the traditional Superman costume with the red shorts is still my favorite Superman costume, but I can live with this new one. Lois and Clark, as I said, are single again. Clark's more of a loner. He's kind of conflicted about the new direction of the Daily Planet, with Lois being in charge of the media TV part of the globe. The Galaxy Communications, we see Morgan Edge return, this time as an African-American, which, you know, in the new continuity, I guess they can recast some of the supporting characters as they see fit. It didn't seem to raise as much controversy as the casting of Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White in the new Superman movie, which I didn't really have a problem with, as long as Lawrence Fishburne pulls off a great performance. I can see him being able to be a gruff Perry White type of character. I liked how Superman's fight with the fire being, whatever it was told along with the captions from Clark's report, which he turned in about Superman's fight with the fire creature. And it was kind of a sad ending with Clark went to Lois's apartment and find that there was already another man in her apartment. It was a very dense story with each page had like 8 to 12 panels. And I was very much surprised that I liked it even a little bit better than Action Comics number 1. After reading it and George Perez's writing and layouts, I had a reaction I have not had in a long time for a Superman comic book. After I finished reading it, it made me want to read it again. It was a very dense story that you could sink your teeth into, and I'm the kind of a comic book reader. I enjoy stories like that. I don't mind some issues that are like action-packed and, you know, they're quite kind of quick to go through, but when it's a dense story like this, I do enjoy that type of comic book story. I didn't like the one-page teaser some weird alien who appeared on Earth, which teased to Stormwatch number one. It had nothing to do with the story, rest of the story going on in Superman number one, so I thought it was really unnecessary. As once again, George Perez proved what a great writer he was with Jesus Moreno, was a great artist. Although it's been announced that George Perez will be leaving with issue number 6, and I think Dan Jurgens and Keith Giffen will be taking over the creative reins, at least in the writing. I'm not sure about the artist. I really enjoyed Superman number 1. Issue number 2, which was published on October 26th, carrying the December 2011 cover date. General Lane has a conversation with Superman involving Lois, and we see more of the Clark and Lois relationship that has developed in the year, 5 years from, you know, action, the time portrayed in Action number 1 to the 5 years later in the Superman title. Superman fought a creature that was invisible to his senses, but not to everyone else around him. I liked this fight scene better than the one against the fire creature in the first issue. Superman used his brains to figure out a way to beat his opponent, with a little help from Lois and Jimmy and the TV coverage of the fight. Issue number 3, which carried the January 2012 cover date, published on November 23rd. Art was by Nicola Scott, who I'm not really familiar with her, but I do like her art. Superman is seen as a threat by someone in the media, which kind of creates some interesting conflict with Lois, who is kind of seen as maybe not Superman's girlfriend, but there's kind of the potential for some tension where she would be considered a little too friendly to Superman. And Superman fought an ice creature in this issue, and he's recognizing some Kryptonian speech in these weird creatures. Now, number 4 came out Wednesday, and I won't be getting that until Saturday. While I don't have a problem with the Superman menace for this story, as I said, since this is a more cynical era, it does seem natural that this would, as I said, this would be a natural part of the plot, as long as it's not a permanent part of the plot. I'll go along for the ride. And this finishes up our coverage of the new 52 Superman. What this new continuity gives for me, as far as Superman is concerned, is hope. And that's more than I had going into 2011. Superman Grounded was turning out to be a dreadful storyline. I wasn't going to drop it. I was going to give it a couple months, see how I liked it. Maybe I would have, but I had to publicly say thank you to Chris Robeson for making a really bad storyline something that I was looking forward to reading, even though his contribution was the only thing bright spot in that whole story. Another thing that I'm glad of is it's great to see Clark Kent back. He's been gone a couple of years with a new Krypton storyline. To cover his absence to protect his secret identity, Clark took an extended leave from the Daily Planet. It's like, you can't have Clark without Superman. Eventually, I'm kind of a comic book reader. I get tired of just the superhero stuff. I like stuff about the secret identity of the character when he's not in the suit. What's going on in his life? Maybe this is my version of a soap opera since I don't follow them on TV. But I like the personal aspect. Maybe not soap opera is not the best word for it. I like the personal touches in the story. Seeing the personal lives of the hero. And for those Superman fans who absolutely hate the new continuity and have kind of, you know, turned their back on Superman, I'm not going to argue or say you're wrong, because I was right where you're at back in 1986. I was at Walden Books at the local mall, which has since closed, and now Books A Million is the big bookstore. But I remember looking at the spinner rack and looking at Man of Steel number 1 by John Byrne and thinking, this is not my Superman. But I wasn't really reading or following comic books. None of my friends were into comics, as I've shared in the past episodes about my getting into comics, since I'd grown up. But when I had a new coworker who was interested in comics, that along with a comic store just a few blocks from my work, when I went into that store and got into comics, I checked out Superman because, you know, I wasn't going to have a comic book collection without Superman. It was right smack in the middle of Superman Exile, and I've been on board ever since. You know, they've tweaked Superman's continuity here and there over the years. And, you know, in the end of the day, all I care about are good Superman stories. I think this new continuity has been a change of pace, and so maybe DC's editorial staff, maybe they've been re-energized about giving us good Superman stories once again. And so far, so good. And come this time next year, I'll tell you what I think about this new Superman, the new 52 universe. I'm not sure how I'm going to like this Elemental Villains storyline in Superman, but, you know, time will tell. As far as the rest of the New 52, the only other non-Superman, non-Legion title I picked up was All-Star Western. That was mainly because of Jonah Hex and the fact that the writing team of Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray were going to be working on the character. I did read and collect the early issues of their previous Jonah Hex series, but mainly because my son enjoyed it, but when he kind of dropped out of comics and I had to begin cutting back my titles to really get my comic book collecting into a budget I could sustain, that was one of the titles I had to drop. And I had some room in my budget so I could add some other titles, so I've learned that I still love superheroes. That's my foundation of my comic book collecting. I'll be 100. I'll still enjoy superhero comics, but I like to kind of branch out into other genres and comics, science fiction, and I wasn't going to pass up this opportunity to once again read Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray's take on Jonah Hex, and so far All-Star Western is not disappointing me. He's the same Jonah Hex from the previous series that I enjoyed. Unlike other podcasters who were able to afford to be able to buy and read all 52 titles, I wasn't able to do that, although I did listen to their review episodes. One thing that does give me some concern is that I wonder if DC isn't making the same mistake they've made in past reboots. Instead of just starting fresh with a clean slate with all of their characters for their most popular ones like Batman, Green Lantern, it's like they're just picking up where they left off. Batman still has had a bunch of Robins, which doesn't seem to make sense for a 5-year period. It's like he's going through Robins like most people change their socks. I think it would have been better to start off with, you know, maybe Dick Grayson having been the former Robin, now Nightwing, and now Damian, Bruce Wayne's son, as the new Robin, and introduce, you know, Tim Drake and Jason Todd later, but you know, it is what it is. And with Green Lantern, you know, they've picked up after the War of the Lantern storyline. But we'll see how it goes. Wonder how long it'll be before DC will have to tweak their continuity again. But I do feel better about the future of Superman in the comic books than I did this time last year. And finally, this will wraps up our coverage of Superman in 2011. But before I go, first of all, I have to thank all of you listeners out there for sticking with me. This has been a year of change for me since the old hosting site shut down right around Thanksgiving. The website gave their podcasters a couple of weeks' notice, and I was able to set up the new website on Blogger because I can't afford the, you know, paying the bandwidth at the moment still. And second of all, I want to thank my fellow Superman podcasters who have kind of really brought some interest back into the Man of Steel covering every era. We also have podcasts now covering Supergirl and Superboy, thanks to Daniel Reed covering Supergirl's classic Silver Age stories and J. David Weider. I was sad to see him close down his Superman Forever radio, but I'm glad to see he's picking up covering the classic Superboy stories, beginning with his appearances in More Fun Comics. When I first went to cover the Silver Age back at the beginning of 2011, I was wanting to cover Superboy as well, but I was wanting to stick with the Silver Age. And since Superboy started in, you know, More Fun Comics, I was struggling with, you know, where does that fit? You know, Superboy started in the late 40s before the what we consider the start of the Silver Age. And finally, I just decided I'll just leave Superboy to someone else to cover, and I'm glad someone picked him up. And I also want to thank Michael Bailey, who took an off-the-cuff comment I made about, you know, all the other members of the Superman family of podcasts, and ran with it and created the Superman Podcast Network, a central hub for all of us to post our episodes. And I hope all of you listeners will stick around and check out, if you're not listening to other Superman podcasts, go to the Superman Podcast Network at supermanpodcastnetwork.com. All the current Superman podcasters are upload their episodes to that website, and so you can check them out. And once again, thanks for everyone for sharing their love and enthusiasm for the Man of Steel. Next episode, which will be the first episode of 2012, we will continue our regularly scheduled programming, and we will cover the Superman family of comic books, cover dated March 1957. Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen, number 19, and World's Finest Comics, number 87. And in about a month, we'll finally get to the May issues, and we'll look at finish our look at the 5,000 prize DC slogan contest. And that will be with the May 1957 cover dates, probably around the end of January. In 2 weeks, we will take a look at the Superman comic books, cover dated May 1960. Superman number 137 and Action Comics number 264. Also, coming up in 2012, maybe in the first couple of months, probably before spring, I haven't really looked that far ahead, but by the time we get into the end of the Superman family, Showcase Presents Superman Family Volume 1, we will begin our look at the Lois Lane stories, beginning with her first appearances in the Showcase title, which we've mentioned in the Elsewhere in DC Comics when we've looked at the Superman books in the late 50s. So coming up in 2012, Lois Lane will join the Superman family of comic books we will feature, and we'll look at a lot of the fun Lois Lane stories from her own title. And thanks for listening, and join me again next week when we'll crash through the time barrier and explore more Silver Age adventures of Superman in 2012. And as always, don't forget to wear your indestructible cape.
Look, up in the sky.
It's a bird.
It's a plane. No, it's SupermanHomepage.com, the number one Superman fan site in the world. SupermanHomepage.com, covering the world of Superman from the 1930s to today. News, reviews, rumors, and reports. SupermanHomepage.com for all your Superman comics, TV shows, movies, cartoons, radio shows, and more. Everything you ever wanted to know about the Man of Steel and more. SupermanHomepage.com.
This concludes another episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. The home website can be found at thesupermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com. Episodes are also available on iTunes, as well as most other podcast aggregators, as well as supermanfanpodcast.wordpress.com and the Internet Archive at archive.org. Expanded show notes can be found at supermanfanpodcastblog.blogspot.com. Your emails are welcome at supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com, and I look forward to reading them. The Superman Fan Podcast is a proud member of the following: the League of Comic Book Podcasters at comicbooknoise.com/league, the Comics Podcast Network at comicspodcasts.com, the Superman Web Ring of Websites, and the Superman Podcast Network, which can be found at supermanpodcastnetwork.com, home to a variety of podcasts featuring the Man of Steel. The theme music for this podcast is titled Plans in Motion, composed by Kevin MacLeod, part of the royalty-free music library at Incompetech.com. If you're interested in the comic books I read each week, you can sample my spoiler-free comic book review blog, my pull list at mypulllist.blogspot.com, and you can send email about this blog to mypulllist@gmail.com. You can join the Superman Fan Podcast and my pull list groups and pages on Facebook, and follow both the podcast and both blogs on Twitter at Superman Podcast. If you'd like to check out the weekly webcomic I'm working on with From Crisis to Crisis co-host Jeffrey Taylor, go to clockworkcomics.co.uk and try out Slipstream. Clockwork Comics also hosts the webcomic EOS, written and drawn by Adam DeShannon, contributor to the Superman homepage website. Superman and all related characters are trademarked and copyright of DC Comics. Any artwork displayed with these show notes is for entertainment purposes only. I make no claim of ownership on the images shown, nor do I earn any money or profit from this podcast. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Superman Fan Podcast. Join me each week as together we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore more Silver Age adventures of Superman. And don't forget to wear your indestructible cape. And as always, thanks to Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.